everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And today we have some fun real talk with a real leader who I am so grateful to know. George Bratt is...
As promised.
And we're not even going to edit that out because people know that I have my dog, Petey. So Petey is joining us for this episode as well, folks. But George Bratt is become a friend of mine who I'm really honored. I'll give you a little bit of context here. George is an author. He is published over 750 articles in Forbes, has numerous books, one that we'll talk about here today. Writes musicals, is founder and chairman of Prime Genesis. It's an executive onboarding and transition acceleration focused. George will talk about that much better than I could. And, you know, we met at a conference that we had someone else recently, Shannon Hughes, on from, and it was the gathering of people all coming together to, it's called Hatch, to air quotes, hatch a better world. And I went on this snowy walk one morning with George, and it was so amazing to be in his presence and, you know, literally how present you were, George. I felt listened to, and I was also a little bit intimidated because I knew who you were. And I was like, I can't believe he's talking to me for this long. So without further ado, George, welcome. We're so glad to have you on the show today.
I'm thrilled to be here. I've been looking forward to this. I always look forward to my conversations with you.
Oh, thank you. So folks, you can tell I'm pretty excited about this one today. We're going to be focusing so much on the topic of leadership, which I'm clearly so, so passionate about. I talked about so many things that, you know, has been a part of your evolution, George, career and personal. I'm sure there was a lot of overlapping, especially because you do focus in this leadership space. You've worked with some of the biggest brands, Disney, Coca-Cola, J.D. Power and Associates, do some amazing volunteer work for Red Cross, which I know you've got some great stories about that. And you launched your company over 20 years ago. So I want to pause and hear you talk about, how did you get from there to here?
So I knew you were going to ask this question because
you told me.
and I'm happy to go through the chronology if you want. But I thought I'd approach it more thematically.
I love it. Okay, let's go.
So we've got to start with the George Bratt theory of happiness, which
probably
is somewhere along the way. And people watching this, take a note because you're not going to remember this. It's really important. Happiness is good. Hope you wrote that down.
Yes. Got it.
It turns out it's three goods. Pretty much everybody in the world balances this, the doing good for others and doing things they're good at and doing good for me. And some of my investment banking friends may be a little too far out on the good for me scale. And I know some amazing volunteers who are just way out there on the good for others scale. And one of my contemporaries at college, Yo-Yo Ma, doesn't really care about doing good for himself or doesn't really care about the world. He just cares about making great music. He just wants to do what he's good at and rewards.
Okay.
And a lot of people actually stage their career that way. Where in the early stages of your career, you're trying to figure out what you're good at and get good at things, and you're learning, and that's great. And there comes another stage in your career where you're doing really well, and you're making real money or getting real recognition or however you define good for me as, and you're earning or being recognized. And then people hit a point where they go, okay, I'm done, and now I can give back.
Okay.
Do good for others. And I got lucky because I was learning and I was growing at some of the companies you mentioned. And I got mad that. It's amazing what people do when they get pissed off.
Yeah.
We brought a guy in to work for us at Coca-Cola in Japan, and who we'll call Matt for no reason other than that was actually his name. And and we had spent a fortune on this guy. We had an executive recruiter. We had to buy out his stock options at his old company. We had to give him a signing bonus. We had to relocate him and his family and his dog named Petey and his wine and his family to Japan. And he showed up day one after hundreds of thousands of dollars in investment and months and months and months, and was greeted by, oh, you're here. Oh, wonderful. We're so excited. Wait, wait. We're going to need to find you an office. And wait, let me look at my notes. Oh, you'll need a computer and Meishi business cards. And I looked at some. Are you kidding? I said, we got to find a better way to do this. And I did that at Coke in Japan. I did it at Coke in China. And I did it as part of what I was doing leading JD Power, or a division of JD Power, spinoff from JD Power, whichever it was at the time. And when I was done with that, I said, you know, the world needs help in this. And yeah. So this was 20 some odd years ago. And since then, I've been able to blend all three.
Oh.
So what we do really has a massive impact on others, and we'll talk about that. So it's good for others.
Yeah.
And I keep learning. I mean, I and my partners built real strengths in this, but we just keep learning every day. And we make silly amounts of money. So it's really good. So we've got all three.
You got all three for sure. Then congratulations. You figured it out.
And so now I you know what? I probably told you this when we were at Hatch. I live my life in three buckets. I wake up every day and I say, okay, I want to be a contribution. I want to do things for others. And I think about how I can do things for individuals, family, friends, the individuals we help with our consulting business. How do I contribute to knowledge, books, articles, and how do I contribute to joy, mostly through the musicals? So that's a way of looking at how I got here. I'm happy to go into more depth about the individual transitions if you want.
No, I think that's great. I'm actually curious. It sparks me to ask, you talked about those three buckets. Do you think, are those things that you think people are usually aware of as are in it? Or is it somewhat that's like, well, as different phases of your life, you just kind of organically or naturally start to focus on different things?
Oh, I think people are clueless. I think people are clueless in general, but
right.
So my first question interviewing anybody for a job is, why would you want this job?
Mm.
Always. It should be everybody's first question, because every question that you ask biases the next question, and you're going to get an answer. Sorry, I'm going to use you as a guinea pig. The last job you went into, looking back, why did you want that job?
The last job I went into. Oh, because I had a conscious decision that I wanted to change my focus from being in my early 30s. I had looked at my resume and I was like, oh, I'm a professional basketball marketer. And I was like, well, that's wonderful. And I'm honored. And I want to be more evolved. And I want to be more, I wanted more tools in my toolbox, more experiences. So I went into an agency where I could learn fast, grow fast, that kind of thing. So that was my why.
So, terrific. And there is no right answer to that question. We'll play some games a little later where there are right answers. That one is a good at answer. I wanted to put more tools in my toolbox. I wanted to gain experiences. It was for you. The first words of your mouth weren't, hey, I wanted the promotion, or I wanted the money, or I saw the equity value, or whatever. And oh, by the way, they weren't. This was a way I was going to impact the world more. It was, I wanted to grow and learn. It was get good. So the first question helps you understand what people's first priority is. And it's different in general. I'm over generalizing, but in general, it's different at different points in different people's careers. And the reason it should be the first interview question, you just want to make sure it matches
right
what you're looking for from the employer. If I'm looking for somebody where I really want them to continue to grow and learn, because we're the type of organization that, that we're a learning organization where we all get better if we learn every day. That's one thing. But if I'm completely mission driven, then I want people that say, I've got to save the SEALs, or hello, your conversation with Shannon. And it's like, hello, wake up, we have a climate disaster, everybody needs to help. And she is completely mission driven.
Right.
Not judgmentally, it's just where you are at different stages of your career. To answer your question, people are clueless. Sometimes they don't see it, but they know it.
Right, right. I love what you said though about the relationship to at different points in your journey. You know, I think that this is part of why I talk about and encourage people to be aware and increase their awareness of self and others, because I think that helps you to understand, okay, I'm at a different point in my life now. Let me pick my head up and evaluate things a little bit differently, or ask myself some of these questions that I think help in the journey so much. So you started to talk to us about Prime Genesis, which is fantastic and a perfect transition to, you know, can tell us more about it. Like, I know you've talked about what you focus on, but this is interesting to me as I was thinking of it, like, who is it for, but also who is it not for?
So the problem we're solving in the world is that 40% of new leaders fail in the first 18 months. They get fired, forced out, or quit. It's happened to all of us. It's happened to everyone watching this. It happens. And it pissed me off. And with Matt, it pissed me off because I said, we're just not doing this right. And so over the last 20 some odd years, we've built an entire business about how to help people accelerate through those transitions, do better, and reduce the rate of failure. And we tell people that we reduce the rate of failure from 40% to below 10%. It's actually more like 5%. So 95% of the people we work with are either in the same job or get promoted.
Nice. 5%.
So that's, you know, everybody has a different mission, and, you know, we're not curing cancer, we're not solving the climate crisis. There are a lot of things we're not doing, but we are helping these leaders.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So does the company employ you, or is it an individual seeks your services, or a little of both? Just because we have so many people who are in our audience who are either already at the executive level, they're going to be sooner rather than later. And some of them have probably experienced, as you just said, the things that you're talking about right now. So I want people to have an understanding of who is it for, who isn't it for.
I mean, it's my mission. So we've built different levels of support.
Right.
As you mentioned, Tuesday's article was my 751st article for Forbes.
Amazing.
Well, they're all online. And they're all free.
Okay.
So if you don't have any money and you don't have a lot of time, you know, look up Brad Forbes executive onboarding. It'll pop up. Actually, just look up executive onboarding. It'll pop up.
Yep.
So that's free. There's a whole bunch of stuff on our website. All those articles are on our website somewhere. And then we have all sorts of downloadable tools that are, again, free. And then, as you said, I've written 11 books on the subject, and you can get those for around $25, $30. So you can do that. We then have a whole online program to help people create 100-day action plans. It's called New Job Prep. You can go on it, whether or not you've read the book. And it is this video work stream that walks you through creating a 100-day action plan. We charge like $495 for that. And then we do what we used to. We haven't done one of these in 2 years. But we used to do live sessions every Friday for people going to new jobs, where they come down, sit down with me or one of my partners, and we charge $2,500 for that. The big thing is we come in and help people create their 100-day action plans and then help them them and their teams implement their plans over the first 100 days. That's the big thing.
Got it.
And in that case, that's $100,000. $100,000 for 100 days. And in that case, it's always the company that pays for that.
Got so it.
Free, couple of bucks, couple hundred bucks, or get your company to pay for it.
Got it. Well, thank you for sharing all of that. Again, I think that this topic is so important, and I really wanted to stress how accessible it is, to be able to work with you or benefit from the impact you're making. And people who are listening are either really representing these individuals or they're representing more the companies that they're leading. So thank you so much for all of that you shared here, and including what inspired you, which I love the part that you said that you were pissed off about something that, inspired you to start it. Because as I shared with you, that was part of what inspired me to start this podcast, is just, again, being like seeing ineffectiveness in leadership and people in the seats that I don't think are the best people to be in those seats. And so I was like, let's focus on some of those people like this. So let me shift a little bit. You talked about kind of that your passion. We talked a little bit about purpose, and you pointed to Shannon Hughes with the climate. Part of this really is your passion and purpose. And you shared with me that you actually donate a portion of your services every year to nonprofits. So I just wanted to showcase that because I think it's really important. And I think actually you even shared with me, I'd love if you'd share today, that's actually been one of your examples of the biggest impact that you've made. Am I right?
So yes, we do. We committed to doing 10% of our work every year pro bono. Mm. Because we can, and it makes such an impact. It's better than money. Now, I give money to some things, but this is what I really love to do. So this was how I met Charlie Shemansky, who I know you connected with.
Yeah.
So again, it's a story of when I got mad. I was, let's go back. So we've got time for this. So I was in the United Kingdom. I was head of marketing for Coca-Cola in the United Kingdom. And I went to a thing by a presentation by somebody from Doctors Without Borders. And she talked about going into one of the refugee camps in Rwanda at the time. 100,000 people in the camp. 5,000 of them were sick. 5,000 sick people. And she asked us who we would treat first. So who would you treat first? You go into a refugee camp, there's 5,000 people.
Oh, you're asking me, who would you treat?
Yeah, I am asking you. It's just, this is a two-way conversation. You're the only one that gets the answer.
The guest puts me on the spot, folks. Oh my God, when you said that, I would say either the youngest people or the oldest people.
There you go. So the youngest or the oldest, which, both of those make sense.
Yeah.
Her answer was very strange. She said none of them. She said, walk into the refugee camps and job one is keep other people from getting sick. Oh. So the first thing they do is secure the water supply.
Right.
Then they secure the food supply and then they vaccinate everybody. Then they go back and do triage where, the normal triage.
Wow.
To people. It was fascinating. So I parked that in my mind. It made a big impact. And years later, I was watching the response to the earthquake in Haiti. The first big earthquake. And I'm literally day two, I'm yelling at the screen as I don't know if you remember, but there were all these different groups from different nationalities all came in to help. Army, Red Cross, whatever. And they're tripping over each other. And they're all trying to get into the rubble to pull out the last possible survivor. And I'm screaming, water supply, guys. Medicine, go vaccinate people. And sure enough, whatever it was. I mean, anything more than one is too many, but a lot of people died in the initial earthquake. 10,000 people died of cholera 10 months later.
Wow.
Because they didn't secure the water supply. And I just said, this is nuts. Mm-hmm. I got mad and I said, I'm going to fix this. And so I wrote a thing called, so my main book is called The New Leader's 100-Day Action Plan.
Yep.
100-Day Action Plan. And I said, I need to write something called the New Leader's 100-Hour Action Plan, leading through a crisis. And then I said, okay, so where am I going to deploy it? And I chose the American Red Cross because I thought it was doable. I didn't know I'd be the American Red Cross. So I went through LinkedIn, found somebody I knew who could introduce me to somebody else I knew who they knew. And I sort of worked my way in and I found the guys sort of managing disaster response. And I got to them and said, listen, I got this idea. And they let me listen in on all their disaster response calls for 6 months. Just listen, fly on the wall. Didn't let me bark. You know, I was just there. You know, the national calls, the local, it was all the national calls, but disaster started locally. And when I was ready, I worked with them and created the plan. And I went in to talk to, it was actually Charlie Szymanski's predecessor, who had built the American Red Cross's disaster response protocols. And I went in and I'm telling you, I made the best sales presentation of my life. Okay. I sat down with this guy. I mean, I was trying to get this guy who had developed the protocols to change.
Wow.
Really not easy. This guy built it 35 years, twilight of his career. There's no reason to change unless you give him one. And so I went in and I said, you know, they introduced me. I spent 6 months working with you on the outside consultant. You know, as I understand it, you currently have 700 chapters where you have people and trucks, and money, and stuff ready for them. And when a disaster strikes, the local teams respond instantly. This is great. And having studied and looked at it, I'm here to tell you that what your people are doing on the ground is nothing short of miraculous. And my strong recommendation as the outside consultant is not to change that in any way.
Okay.
And then I looked at your national response. And when things get too much for the local people to handle, they call up the national people. You send a disaster response director in. They have 3 to 5 days to assess the situation, figure out what they need. Meanwhile, you're assembling what they need. And they call you up and say, we're going to need whatever, 1,000 trucks, and, or you know, 100 trucks, 1,000 people, and $1 million. You send it to them, and people get there, whatever, day 4, day 5, day 6. I said, I got to tell you, having watched this for the last 6 months, these people bring order to the chaos. They're amazing. They're wonderful. They're giving. And my strong recommendation as the outside consultant is don't change any of this. He goes, great. And I said, but now, now that you've done this, and you couldn't have done it until you built it to this shape, this point. There's an opportunity to change from a sequential response to a parallel response. What are you talking about? I said, the day the disaster response director drops in, they have a feel. They can call up and say, listen, we got a disaster here. They wouldn't be there if there wasn't a disaster. We got a crisis. And we're going to need between, I don't know, 100 and 200 trucks and 1,000 and 2,000 people and $1 million and $2 million. Go, great, thank you. Put the first 100 people on airplanes. Put the first 1,000 people on airplanes. Put the first 100 trucks on the road. Put the first $1 million in the bank account that day. And then when they call up the next day and say, did I say 100 to 200 trucks? I really meant 125 to 175, 75 more. And when on the third day they say, it's more like 150 to 160, send them another 25. And when they call up on the fourth day and say, we overestimated, we don't need 150 trucks, we only need 140, send 10 back. If you've sent 100 too many people, send them back. If you put $200,000 too much in their bank account, tell them not to spend it. But if you do this, you can get your people on the ground, your trucks on the ground, your money at work 4 days earlier. Because instead of taking 5 days to figure it out and then sending them on the sixth day, you send it on the second day. And these people, and it's a disaster, they need help. And he goes, okay. And that's what I did with Charlie. I then implemented it, where we trained all the new disaster response directors. They flipped the protocols instantly. And so based on that, and this is, you know, anytime there is a flood, an earthquake, a fire, which there are more and more, or a major snowfall where you need the Red Cross, I'm saving lives because the American Red Cross is getting there 4 days earlier than they used to.
Wow.
And really cool. And to your point, we did all that work pro bono.
Oh, that's amazing. And talk about impact. Talk about impact. And I think it can't be lost the way you talked about this. It wasn't that you actually proactively reacted to, it's funny that I just said that, you proactively took action on like a feeling that you had, something had to be done. And then you went, found the person to go pitch something to. And I think, you know, a lot of times people wonder like, well, what can I do? Or, you know, how can I use my voice or my action as a leader? And a lot of times it really is about finding that courage and that gumption to just go make shit happen.
Well, it's just, it's a lot of times it is a reaction. I would call it a proactive reaction, whatever. I mean, I do stuff when I get mad. I see things, I go, no, this can't stand.
No, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I just feel like, this time of this world, so much that we're seeing, I truly believe we need more of that, you know, that like, go take action to go make something better. And I don't think there's anything, you can do it in a really big way. And even the small stuff, you know, it matters. So thank you for sharing all of that. So you hit on the book. So just folks, I'll just say it again, the New Leaders 100-Day Action Plan, it is available for people to buy probably everywhere you would buy any book. George is well known as an author. So consider it. And I think that there's many times that I think people get into these positions and they are asked, you know, put together a 60, 90-day plan, something like that. So it's a really great guide. So thank you so much for, and it sounds like you really integrate it into the work that you do at Prime Genesis. So, you know, again, just folks pay attention to that one. So I want to talk to you a little bit more about just the topic of leadership.
Go ahead.
Again, I think there's so many people on who are listening who are on some sort of a journey toward leadership. Or they're already, I think that I personally have a feeling that everybody has the opportunity to lead in any capacity, be it small, large. And one of the things that I know you focus on is others focused leadership. So I'd love for you to share that. And we are very honored to be able to share an article that George wrote, is going to be on our blog, about others focused leadership. So I'm going to pause here. Talk to the people here. Share your view about this others-focused leadership.
Yeah, I'm going to put the two together. Okay. So it's other-focused leadership and as leadership. And I actually thought this through. You know, before I was kidding about writing down happiness is good because you can remember that. This one's harder to remember. So it's worth. And I know you can pause it and go back when you're recording it, but or watching it. But so here I'm going to give you a very packed sentence.
Okay.
And then I'm going to unpack it. And it's variations of it are in my books, articles, whatever. But so I think leadership is all about inspiring, enabling, and empowering others to do their absolute best together to realize a meaningful and rewarding shared purpose. So, and I can go on for weeks about this, but let me unpack it. We'll start with a shared purpose. But by shared purpose, I mean, people get purpose. I break it down into mission, vision, and values. It's I think, think Cynic, why, how, what, think, you know, you go different directions, but it's, what are we called to do, which you really don't get a choice on because you're called. That's your mission. What's your picture of success, which is your vision, and the values are who you are that you won't walk by on the way to do that. So when I talk about shared purpose, that's that. So that's just, we go on forever about that. So realize meaningful, rewarding, shared purpose. Meaningful. The stuff that really has meaning is back to happiness, is the good for others.
Hmm.
And yes, you know, some people have more of a bias to do good for me. You know, we can get into ethics and questions about that, but good for that. And people definitely want to do stuff where they're learning, great. But the ones that really, you really care about, the ones, they're out there doing good for others. So the biggest group, when I say meaningful, that's code for good for others.
Okay.
Rewarding is good for me, because the balance, it can't be just good for others. It's got to be good for me too. And there's got to be something in it. Realize. So do all this stuff to realize a meaningful and rewarding shared purpose. Realize means make it real. Bring it to fruition. You know, people sit around, they see stuff, and you say, you got to get shit done, do stuff. You know,
yeah.
Until somebody takes action, it's not real, it's not realized. Helping people do their absolute best, that's good at it. So this thing in here, I've buried all three components of happiness: meaningful, good for others, rewarding, good for me, absolute best is good at it. Together. Together is about an interdependent team. Some people can do some things on their own. They're individual contributors. They're artists that do stuff on their own. I mean, there's always a context, but you know, almost by definition, you know, leadership is leading others. But there's different types of leaders. There's artistic leaders, there's scientific leaders, and there's interpersonal leaders. Uh-huh. I'm focused on interpersonal leaders here. I should have made that point. But the interpersonal leaders are about bringing people together, and the interdependent team is realizing that different people have different strengths and they've got to work well together to bring out each other's strengths. So then inspire, enable, and empower. Inspire is direction. This gets at delegation. So this is the delegation model. Whereas, you know, if I'm going to inspire somebody, I'm going to inspire them about the purpose. This meaningful and rewarding shared purpose is what's really going to inspire them. I'm not really going to inspire them. They're going to inspire themselves, but I'm going to help them see it. Mm. And I'm going to help them understand the purpose, and I'm going to give them clear direction. Mm. Enable is the resources. If we drop these disaster response directors on the ground in disasters and we don't give them money and people and trucks, they can't do anything. You have to enable people to succeed, and then you have to empower them. And empower them is about authority. It's about the ability to make the tactical decisions and then be accountable to it. So big sentence, but with those definitions, if I now read it to you again, leadership is about inspiring and enabling and empowering others to do their absolute best together to realize a meaningful and rewarding shared purpose. That's my, if I had 3 minutes, that's my take on leadership.
Amazing. And I love the way you dissected it. You could tell I was like grabbing my pen and writing feverishly, even though I could go back and hear it. Thank you so much. I could go on and on as well, but just thank you so much for the way you talked about that. And in it, in what you just described, you also talked about three types of leaders. So folks, there's, when you're researching things that George has written about, he has also written about these three types of leaders. Can you say the three types again, please? Interpersonal, the other two
artistic,
are?
Artistic and scientific.
Okay.
And so what happens is, and I didn't write notes on this, there's an article on The World Needs Three Types of Leaders. Yeah. But you know who they are. The scientific leaders, they're more logical and rational. They run around the world looking for problems to solve, and they want solutions. They want to fix things. They want to invent new things. They play to people's minds. The interpersonal leaders play to people's hearts, because they want people to get passionate about the cause and follow me and let's go do stuff together. And you know, they pull people together. And the artistic leaders, who you and I both, actually, everybody knows a lot of them. Yeah, they're playing a different game. They're trying to influence people. They care about feelings. They want people's souls.
Hmm.
So, you know, minds, hearts, souls. And the world needs all three. I'm not saying one's better than the other. And guess what? Some people blur, but you need different leaders for different things.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And one thing I wanted to talk to you about, I remember when I was kind of planning for this, I was like, oh, wait, I also want to ask you about this, which is a topic of introverted leaders, and which I just am curious, like, what are your thoughts on that? Because I think, now let me explain what I mean more. I think that stereotypically people think that the leader is out in front a lot of times, talking really loudly, talking fast, like being the orchestrator in a really visible way like that. And I think that other people who don't have that same persona, personality, they can still be amazing, effective leaders, inspirational, all these things. They may be more introverted. And I've seen so many times where those people are often overlooked, even in developing people. So someone may say, oh, that person's so introverted, that person's not, they're not a leader, or they don't have the capacity to be a leader. And I think those are just, I've seen it. And so this is one of the things that has, as you were talking earlier about getting pissed off about things, this is something that along the way has pissed me off at times. And so I'm just curious, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, so I got a lot of thoughts on that, and I'm going to break it into three. So, which of course I probably won't remember, but think about leading different ways, the way you present and the way you think. So, I mean, back to the three types of leaders. These three types of leaders show up in different ways.
Right. I mean,
even the interpersonal leaders don't have to be out in front. They can be the people behind the scenes. I mean, how many great CEOs have had great chiefs of staff who nobody sees and they're behind the scenes? I mean, good grief. When I worked for Disney, it was run by Michael Eisner and Frank Wells. And Eisner was always the one, you know, in front of the room and whatever. And Eisner had a sleep problem. He'd fall asleep in meetings. And he never opened his mouth. And we'd get done with the meeting with Eisner, who was the CEO. And we'd think we'd sold things. And, you know, he talked about the design of the curtains and everything because he was a designer at heart. And then we'd have to go have a second meeting with Wells, who went through all the numbers to make sure the business case would work. And the two of them worked really well because they complemented each other. I mean, Wells was the president of the company. It wasn't right. Like he was the junior analyst. These were both leaders. One was more extroverted, one was more introverted, it looked like. So that's one. So you've got, that's just interpersonal leaders. Then you got scientific leaders who can be very introverted and working towards the solution. You got artistic leaders who can be very introverted working towards feelings. So one, different types of leaders. To the way you present. What you're talking about is the way people present. Extroverts are having the conversation. Introverts are more thoughtful. So, you know, and that masks things. The big thing though is the way they think. So I'm an extrovert. I think with my mouth. I love this debate. I love going back and forth, and you didn't have to send me the questions in advance. You know, you can surprise me with anything. You can't throw me off. I thrive in the debate. Introverts, I'm told, and I have no experience with this, and I'm not sure I really understand what I'm about to say here. So don't dissect this too much. But I'm told introverts think with their brains. I don't know how that works. But what happens is I have one client right now who is a severe introvert, and she's just so personal and delightful. And up in front of the room, everybody loves her. But she thinks about things.
Yeah.
And she is infinitely more effective if you give her something to read the day before a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And it just gives her a chance to engage in it, mull it over, and think about it, so that she can be on the front foot for the conversation. So that's an introverted way of thinking. So yes, of course they're different. And of course they can be valuable. And they can both be valuable. And they're both valuable in the same situation and in different situations. And what you want to do is treasure the differences and bring up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for diving into that. You know, I think there's a choice, a daily choice to lead. And I think I love to hear, and I encourage people to do that and to take that as an opportunity. At the same time, I think so there's a lot of people as they're going along the journey, they think, I want people to understand that there's different ways of doing it. That again, when it comes down to being an authentic leader, a lot of times that is in my view, and I think is reflective of what you're saying, is starting to understand what does it mean to each person to be authentic to themselves as a leader. So someone may be more extroverted, more introverted, maybe more scientific. There's different ways to lead. There's not only one way. And it is something I truly believe is a daily decision to do and to constantly hone.
Fantastic.
So that's my philosophy. You've spent so much, you've been so generous with your time here today. I'm going to ask you one last question here. And then if there's anything else that you want to add before we let you go about your day impacting folks, there's one or two takeaways that you really want to make sure that the audience hears and takes to heart and mind and soul, as you were talking about. What would those things be?
It's just one, and okay. It's not going to surprise you. It's just the other focusedness. And I get there's a balance, and people have to do things that are good for me. And you got to do some of that. And we all need to keep learning and growing and doing things you're good at and getting better at it. But the world just needs more other focused leaders. Mm. I mean, if just people could just go into a situation, instead of thinking me first, or how do I leverage my strengths, think, what's the need? What's the problem to be solved? How do I help these people?
Mm-hmm. What's the impact you're going to make?
The impact you're going to make on others.
Yeah.
Not how the impact is perceived. Mm. Not even how it's perceived or received, but the meaningful long-term impact. If everybody could just focus on that, whatever you're doing, wherever you are, any situation, just if we could all be a little more other focused, just step by step, the world would be a better place.
It's a great way for us to kind of sum up, wrap up our time together. And thank you so much. And folks, as I mentioned, we're going to share George's article on others focused leadership in our blog, so you can see that. Thank you so much, George. Have a wonderful day. And I look forward to the next time that we talk.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you.